Hello, good people. You're listening to Mission Possible. I'm Sheila Murphy, Chief Mobilizer for Mission to Mobilization. We are resourcing returning citizens and changing community perception about the millions of brothers and sisters doing life post-incarceration. Through their valley and mountaintop experiences, their transparency and willingness to share stories are making the mission possible. These citizens are impacting your communities, and I'm really glad about it. Later in the show, you will hear from Coach Nate, how he helps us look at things in a new way. I love the way he helps us think about obstacles and challenges. His battle plans are insightful, invigorating, and infused with wisdom for all of us making our very complex choices in life. Okay, this week's Mission Possible guest is Kiana Johnson, founder and executive director of Life After Release, is changing lives by helping women, mothers, folks that are released from incarceration. This talented and passionate woman has not only changed her own life, but has created a village to bring along so many others. Please open your hearts and give a big Mission Possible welcome to Kiana Johnson. Good morning, Kiana.
Good morning, Sheila. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I just want to get us started. Several things I want you to be able to cover. And so I wanted you to take a quick kind of roll through your incarceration. So the time that you were incarcerated, kind of leading up to that time, and then how you got to where you are right now.
Okay. So I will start by saying that incarceration was something that I never saw in the grand scheme of things of my life. It just wasn't something that my family was, it wasn't like a systematic thing for my family. It wasn't a generational thing for my family. My family is actually from Georgetown, Guyana, and they migrated over here in the early 70s. And they came over here, and education was a very big thing for my family. So incarceration was something that, again, like I said, was not something that was I thought I would ever have to see. During my period of incarceration, I noticed that the women around me were probably like below the line of just like humanity when it comes to their circumstances and their situation. And I couldn't really relate to those things. Some of the women had been in and out of prison, and it was just something that was normal for them. So the conditions, actually, of the incarceration when I was there was just horrible. It was kind of like warehousing an animal, if you think about it. If you think about animals before they go to slaughter, okay. If you could just sit and imagine for a moment what that animal just kind of goes through. They're in solitary. They're usually in a little tiny cage where their head kind of like sticks out, and it's dirty. It's smelly. There's not enough room to move around. There's nothing for that animal to do. They're just waiting until they're slaughtered. And it's kind of like warehousing an animal, if that's the kind of the description that I can give people so that they can understand. The conditions were just not suited for a human being. If you've ever gone to the animal shelter or like where the pound, the puppy pound, if you go there,
right.
they are actually treated in a better condition than the women that are located at the only female facility in the actual state of Maryland. There's only one maximum security prison, which means that whether you are accused or found guilty of stealing a candy bar, or if you commit murder, then you have to be housed with, the other women, regardless of their classifications, which is a big problem. And that's something that I'm fighting legislation for currently during the session.
Okay.
Try to make sure that we get that changed. But the conditions, aside from the physical conditions, is not that great. The actual conditions when it comes to rehabilitation is non-existent. The actual program, the in-house 6-month drug therapeutic program that used to be there, ended in 2016 and was never replaced. And that's a big problem given the current condition and the current landscape of our country, where opioids is a very big problem. And also, when women come home, since I've been home the last 2 years, there's been about maybe 20, 25 deaths of overdosing of the women who I was served time with,
wow.
Which is very concerning, but it's not something people are talking about.
Right. It's tragic to hear. And so often, so many of those horrific stories are not brought to the surface.
Yes, correct.
I want you to talk about the women that you're helping see why, and the, thank you for that vivid example around the, really the humanity or inhumane conditions that we see so often in our prison system. And so I believe that that's what pushed you and what gave you passion to say you wanted to do something about what was happening with women once they come out of that horrific environment. Can you talk about maybe the like the top three challenges that you believe women are facing once they get out? And then just kind of paint a picture for us what she's seeing, what's going on with her.
So I don't personally use the word help. I think that it's a downgrade from what it is that I do. And when you usually when you help people, it just doesn't enable them to be the best that they can be. Because sometimes it just enables them, and it doesn't really help. You know, it doesn't really get them to the next level.
Okay.
What I do is I empower women. I empower them to be their best selves, and I empower them to overlook the challenges that set before them. And because for me, I sometimes feel like when people help people, you know, it's a big me and a little you. And I don't believe that I'm above any other women that are coming out of incarceration. All of our levels are different. We all have different walks of life, and there's all different situations that landed us in the unfortunate situation that has to cause us to do a period of time and being incarcerated in a cage. So I use the term empower, and I use it very intentionally. And the women that I empower are usually, a lot of the times, they are just empowered about me being who I am. And they're empowered by seeing the tenacity and seeing that I don't allow no for an answer. And I don't allow people to dictate what it is that I am going to do. And usually they're just in awe about that, because they feel as though, oh, I'm not worthy. I am just a quote unquote criminal. I don't deserve to have housing. I don't deserve to have a job. I don't deserve to have somebody speak to me in a way where I'm dignified. So these are all stories that they tell themselves day after day. These are all stories that they have been told day after day. And what I do is I come in and I empower the women to understand that you are not the worst thing that you've ever done, that you are a human being, that you are a woman, and in most cases you are a Black woman, and that you are deserving of everything that anybody else has that's walking on this on the face of this planet, regardless of whether or not you have a criminal background or history. So I just want to first name that. And the challenges, and it's just so sad, because just last night I had to take a woman. We bailed mothers out of jail in May, and we bailed them out for Mother's Day through the National Bailout Project for the DMV. And we bailed out 13 women. I'm sorry, we bailed out 15 women. Out of those 15 women, we gave three of those women a fellowship through the National MBA program, and we followed those three women around for the last 5 months. We've given them transitional housing, and we've given them transportation, and we've helped them. And what we've noticed is that mental health is the biggest concern that our women are facing, yet alone going through this very horrific process where you come out and you have post-traumatic stress and nobody is identifying because they believe that you deserve to be where you were. You come out and you have to go right back into being a mother. You have to go right back into, jump right back into society, and you're ill-equipped because you were in this place for so long and nobody gave you any assistance, and then you weren't rehabilitated and all the programs that were there were gone. So mental health for mothers, and for women in general, is the biggest problem that we have. And that coupled with the fact that in Prince George's County in particular, where I am located, we have no mental health facilities. We've tried. We've been everywhere looking for a place to house this woman. We had to cross the line and go to Baltimore City and Baltimore County, and we had to also go to Washington, D.C. to try to get this individual help. But it wasn't something that we can really follow through with. So as a result, we had to actually take this mother to a hotel and pay for 2 days, and we don't know in the next 2 days what we're going to do with this woman, because there's no mental health facilities that can house her. Unfortunately, it looks like she's just going to be on the streets right as of right now. But you know, that's the biggest problem that they face. And if you have mental health illness, I don't know how people expect you to go and work a job. Right. Yeah. I don't know how people expect you to be able to sit down and study and to obtain an education. If your mental health is not in order, then you cannot basically be a whole person, because your mental health is not there. So aside from the child care, aside from transportation, which is like the housing, mental health number one, housing number two, transportation number three, in that particular order, is what women are facing when they come home. So, you know, I try to empower women around the legislative process and around the laws, and trying to help them get on the other side of the law so that they know that they have a voice. Because in the state of Maryland, people who are returning citizens, they are returning home from jail and prison, they are allowed the opportunity to vote. And so they should know who they're voting for, and they should know that the person that they're voting for is not, does not have any mental health facilities, and, you know, coming down the pike, and they should be able to be empowered around that process and be able to have a voice. So that is how I empower the women around those three very, very important obstacles that they face upon coming home.
Wow. Wow, that's powerful. And I love empower. You are so right. That is, it's a strong, and it is a powerful word that moves individuals forward. And so thank you. Thank you for that. I was thinking about a couple of different things that I wanted to ask you, and it takes me to the question around the emotional pull that you and the women that empower other women, as you all are serving together. How do you kind of balance that with your day-to-day responsibilities? So you know your work is focused on empowering women. You have just last night, you had an issue, and you're dealing with right now in the throes of an issue with someone that has mental health challenges. And then there are women that are incarcerated. There are some that have died because of all the issues. How do you personally manage through that with your responsibilities and as being a mother as well?
First, I would like to say that I'm not your normal executive director. I am 100% on call. I consider myself, because I'm also coupled with the fact that I'm an executive director, I am a community organizer. So I really am never off duty, to be quite honest. And the way that I balance that is that I have found a way to draw my children into this process. I have a 19-year-old and I also have a 15-year-old. And so what I do is I find ways to bring them in, because youth are directly impacted by these situations as well. We are moving into a situation where a lot of our children are being arrested at school. We had a situation where 588 students in Prince George's County in the year 2017 was actually arrested. So that's a problem. So what I have done is I have found a way to incorporate the youth into what it is that we are doing. So we actually have a youth organizing arm to our organization, so the women can have somewhere to bring their children. And we are not a normal organization. Even anybody that comes to work for me in any capacity, if they're a woman and they have children, I make accommodations for child care. They can bring their children with them. Their children are not excluded. Everything that I do, my children are with me. And if I go somewhere my children cannot come, then I will not go. Any other organizing spaces that I go into, I'm organizing under Black Liberation. So whenever we go into organizing spaces, we take our children with us. We're very, very clear that there is no separation from children and their mother, and there shouldn't be. So we do, you know, unlike corporate America where, you know, you can't bring your children, you're shunned, we make accommodations at any of the workshops, we have a space for the children to be. And so my children actually help me with that. My oldest son is actually doing a youth injustice podcast that he does every week, where he meets with county officials and he talks to them about what it felt like to not have his mother for 2.5 years and to be separated from his brother for 2.5 years, and to tell his story in a way that it would empower a mother and also her child when they're going through this process, or after they've gone through that process, as a healing element for that post-traumatic stress that women go through once they're incarcerated.
That's awesome. I love it. I love the model, and we need to adopt that more, because that brings healing. And then you're empowering your children, your family, to be able to do the work that they've been called to do. That's awesome, Kiana.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome. I want to, you obviously, you're a powerful, passionate woman. You have tenacity. I agree. I totally agree. And I want you to talk a little bit about how you got there. So maybe reflecting a little bit on your life or some people that believed in you. How did they impact you? share with our audience a little bit about that.
I've had my moments. I've cried. I've been hurt. I've been angry. I've been bitter. I think I've gone through all the stages of grief during my incarceration, and I allowed myself to do that. But after that was all done, I know that my Creator, that my God, created me for a time such as this, just like He created Moses and He created some of the other leaders in the Bible, and even Jesus Himself. When it was time for Him to get up and hang on that cross, He asked the Father, He said, if this cup is not for me, then take it from me. He asked Him three times, and each time His answer was, no, this is your mission. This is what you were called to do. And it was a time that I realized that just everything that had happened to me in the way that it had happened, that I was created for a time like this, and that I was to be and to put forth the message that was put inside of me and the passion that had been birthed inside of me from this experience. And it was not for me to pass. It was not for me to be shamed. It was not for me to ignore, but it was for me to empower and to embrace the Black community and to move forward as a powerful force in creating a movement for my people. And that is how I dealt with that, being able to come out from such a very dark place and enter into light and to shed light is a very, very hard and difficult process. But I have the strength that was given to me that I did not produce myself and that I lean on every single day. A lot of that tenacity comes from my Guyanese grandmother, who raised me and who allowed me to see what it is to be a strong woman. And what it is to not allow anyone to dictate to you what it is that you have to do or what it is that you need to do. And a lot of that came from Doris Gibbons, and I give her the honor on that as well. And a lot of the ancestors that have come before me, and I don't know, to be honest with you, a lot of the times how I deal with what I deal with, I just know that I have been chosen to do so.
Beautiful. I mean, I thank God for your story and for your passion. We have, there's so many families and people that are being strengthened by who you are. And I was just thinking about how all of our stories, how we bring those things together prayerfully for good. And that's what you're doing. Your ancestors, your faith, your relationships, they are on purpose to impact others for this season, for such a time as this. So thank you for that.
Yes, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I wanted you to talk a little bit about how people can support you. You are doing some phenomenal work, remarkable work, and there's also a MPT clip that was produced. I want people to be able to support you either financially or volunteers. Tell us a little bit about what that could look like and how they can see more about what you're doing.
First, I want to put a call to action out to every Black and brown person that is under the sound of my voice. It's no longer a time where we can be passive about the things that are happening around us, especially involving the criminal justice system. I tell people that it's not if, but when this is going to come knocking on your door. If 1 in 4 Americans are touched by this injustice system that we have. And my work, although I hate to ask people for anything, I usually try, as strong as I am, I'm always pushing through regardless of what it takes. And if my shoes are torn or if I'm not 100%, I don't care. I'm moving forward. But it is a time where it takes time and it takes money to build what it is that I'm building. And it takes resources, so time and resources. So first and foremost, I call for volunteers. I call for people that if you live in the state of Maryland, I'm in Prince George's County, we have a meeting once a month and we have a community event once a month. It's every second Monday of the month is our community meeting, and then we have a community event. So first and foremost, I give a call for your time. If you can give time, please contact me at 240-845-4007 if you would like to be involved, if you would like to know more about what it is that we do. We're very active in our community, and we also give community service hours for the youth if they would like to be a part. That's my first call of action. And my second call is, because if you cannot give your time and you have an opportunity to give of your finances, and this is the way that you want to support me, then you can write us a check at Life After Release, or you can Cash App us at, for people who have Cash App, or you can, and Cash App is the $ Life After Release, one word, if you want to Cash App us any funds. You know, there's many, more than one ways to donate. You don't have to always donate our money, and I'm not an advocate of just always donating money, but we need your time. We need your service as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. Lastly, I'd like to give my guests an opportunity to believe or pretend as though they had the opportunity to speak into the homes of every American in this country. What would be one thing that you would want them to know about returning citizens and or this work?
First and foremost, I want people to know that in the state of Maryland that we could be considered a returning citizen, but not even really, because a citizen is a person that has rights. A citizen is a person that is, they're supposed to be where they are. That's the feeling that you get as a citizen. When you come from another country, you take the citizenship, and you feel like you're supposed to belong, that you've now become an American, and you have rights. But the majority of the returning citizens across this nation do not have rights. So I even challenge the word itself, returning citizen, because we never left this country. Although it may seem like we left this country and we've gone away to a never, never land, but we never left this country. And when we come back to our societies, we're supposed to come back fully restored and fully having all of our rights, the right to vote, the right to work, the right to, the right to live, to get into an apartment without having to check a box. So what I want people to know is that first and foremost, returning citizens in every state is not considered a returning citizen. And a lot of states, a lot of returning citizens still can't vote, and they're not allowed to exercise that right amongst their legislators. They're not allowed to say who governs them and who they pay taxes to. They're not allowed to do that. So that's the first thing I wanted to know. And the second thing I want people to know is that 90% of individuals who are considered, who have a record, 90% of them never had their day in court. 90% of them accepted plea deals. A lot of them accepted plea deals for things they did not do. So what I want people to understand is to first look at this justice, take a second look at the justice system. Before we start focusing on the returning citizen, take a look at the justice system that is funneling people through it, with the injustice as the foundation. So I wanted to look less at the actual quote-unquote returning citizen, and let's start to look at this system that is funneling out individuals that are being chewed up and spit out by this system. That's what I want people to do.
Yes. Kiana, I tell you, you're on fire, and I'm honored to have this time with you. You're a part of the collective mission that's possible, and you're reminding us that the power of sharing and moving in your passion changes lives. Your story, your gift, your talents, your resources are there on purpose. And I want you to know that you're positively and absolutely impacting our world. And I just want to thank you again for your time today and speak blessings over you and your family.
No problem. And thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
And I just wanted to make one more thing.
Sure.
I am having and hosting with Georgetown Law and the Law for Black Lives, I will be hosting the first ever DMV post-conviction forum on November the 2nd at 11 a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Georgetown Law Center in Washington, D.C. on New Jersey Avenue. So if you would like to learn more about that, or you would like to get an invitation to that, because it will be invitation only, you have to have a ticket. It's free, but because of the seating, we have to limit the amount of people that we are going to bring in. So if you are interested, please, please give me a call personally, and I will make sure that you get on the list. My phone number is 240-845-4007, and I will send you information on that.
And your website one more time?
My website is lifeafterrelease.org.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you so much. You have an awesome day. I will talk to you soon.
Thank you. You do the same.
Okay, bye-bye. Up next, Coach Nate's battle plan. If you haven't started already, take some notes. Nate?
Hey, human. Coach Nate here with today's battle plan. Today I want to talk about choices. It's been said that actions speak louder than words. J.K. Rowling is known to have said, "It's our choices that show what we truly are far more than our abilities." We can choose on how we respond to things that are said to us, done to or against us, things that occur. That brings out our inner self, our true self, our real character. We can have the ability to climb any mountain, but if we don't exercise that with discretion, it doesn't matter. We can possess the ability to be forgiving and loving, but if we don't do that in the face of hatred and despise, what difference does it make? We can have the ability to be kind and caring, but if we fail to do that when the opportunity presents itself, what difference does it make? In this world that we live in this environment that we are existing in right now, there's a lot of negativity. We all know that. We possess inside of us the ability to counter that, to dispel hate with love, to root out meanness with kindness, to care instead of being apathetic, to take the high road rather than responding in kind and contributing to the problem. We can choose to be part of the problem, or we can choose to be part of the solution. I have no doubt that the ability exists inside each one of us to do better, to be better, to cause things to improve. What's stopping that from happening is choice. We're choosing to follow the masses, follow the trend, follow the crowd in responding in kind rather than choosing a character-building choice to step up, to make a difference, to put ourselves out there, to take the high road, to risk being liked by others, to risk inviting pushback, retaliation, becoming an outcast, evoking the ire of others, fear of unfavorable consequences, harm, fallout of not being liked, of being on the outside, of being looked down upon, of not being part of the in crowd for what we know our character is telling us to do. It's called bucking the trend. What is a trend? A group of lost sheep following each other off a cliff? Be a trendsetter. Be the thermostat that sets the tone, the temperature, not the thermometer that adapts to it. So again, you can choose to contribute either way to the good or the bad. You can complain about it, or you can invoke your inner character, and you can be the light in the storm, the light in the darkness. Create the calm in the dismay. What character choice are you going to make today? Until next time, this is Coach Nate. Live your best life on purpose now.
Thanks, Coach. Today, Kiana said a lot of powerful things, and she challenged me to think about, one, how she doesn't use the word help. She empowers people to be who they are called to become. Secondly, how she influenced environments to include her children, or she opted out. I've been looking at pride a lot lately. What does that look like for me personally, and what thoughts, perceptions, and behaviors do I have that need to be dismantled? What do I care about? I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to know everything, be it all. I'm just me, doing my part in the collective. Just as I'm having this conversation with myself, I want to remind us the work of perception change in the nation starts right here with you and I. It's personal. My closing words or thoughts for today come from Psalms 139, 23 through 24. It says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me, and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting." Call to set up a walk a month in the life of a returning citizen simulation. Make sure your congregation is considered returning citizen friendly, and shop with companies that value this mission. Learn how to do that at missiontomobilization.com and follow us on social media. I'm Sheila Murphy, and this is Mission Possible. Don't forget to visit natebattle.com for today's battle plan. Until next time,
create your battle plan.
and make your mission possible.